Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today. So let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I have exciting guests today, and the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting are going to come on and chat a bit. So, first up, I have fabric designer, author, and the gal who invented polka dots, and that's actually P-O-K-E, a dots. She also has applique glue as one of her many inventions. This is Jill Finley of Jilly Studio. And I'm really excited because I love Jill's saturation of color that she works with. Her quilts are beautiful. She loves applique like I do. And so, you know, I want to have her on here to talk about applique and some fun techniques that she does in her new book. So, hi, Jill. How are you?
Well, I'm good, Pat. So glad to be here.
You know, Jill, the last time I spoke to you, you were moving.
Wasn't it crazy? At least it was crazy on my end. I don't know if it was that crazy on your end, but, oh, yeah, that's a lot of work, but it's done now, and we can settle in.
That's good. Do you have a new studio space? Is it different?
I do. It's so nice because I've got a nice big studio just right off of my family room, and I can be aware of what's going on in the rest of the house, but still be working and have plenty of space for my business and my office, plus all of the creative space. It's great.
Oh, good. So you sort of got the studio of your dreams when you moved?
Yeah, well, I could dream bigger, I'm sure, but I'll take it, let me tell you.
Yeah, that would be like a separate house in the backyard. You know.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what I'm always dreaming about. Yeah, build me a little building back there. So now you have a book out that came out a couple months ago called Home Sweet Quilt. I just love this book. It's beautiful.
Oh, thank you. It turned out so nice. The gals at Martingale do such a great job, don't they, with all the layout and everything, and they really produce a really nice product. And the book's doing really well. I'm really pleased. Very grateful.
So tell me a little bit about what's in the book. This is not your first book, but, you know, it's maybe a little different than your other book. So how did you approach doing this book, designing for it?
Well, this one was based on how I use quilts in my home. So I like to use my quilts to decorate my home, and so I kind of went as a walk through a home. So it's got projects for everything from your front porch, your kitchen, to the bedrooms. So there's three projects in each area of the home, and there's 12 projects total, and I think it turned out really nice. It's something that's useful as well as beautiful.
Yeah, I love the idea of quilts on the porch.
Isn't that great?
Yes. I have a porch. I should do this.
Put a quilt out there?
Yeah, I should. Well, there's a bicycle out there. That wouldn't be so cute. It's not a cute bicycle, but I'll have to
drape a quilt in the basket of the bicycle. It'd be so cute.
Yeah, I had to get my husband to put a basket on his bicycle.
There you go. Yeah, and paint the bike pink, and he'd love that, too.
Yes, he would. Yeah, that would be adorable. So one of the great things, Jill, is that you're so creative that you're always thinking up solutions to problems. That's how I think of you. You know, your mind is, like, always going. One of the neat projects or ways of solving things you have is using bias for parts of your quilt that not all of us use it for. Tell me about that.
Well, bias is about the easiest thing that you can applique because it's when you're done making it, it's prepared, it's ready to go. All you have to do is stitch it down. And so I always tell quilters in my classes, in my workshops, that this is the easiest thing you can do in applique, and so many people are afraid of it. And I'm talking about like using it for vines or stems or curlicues, loops, and things that look difficult, but is very, very simple to do.
And so you're making bias by turning under both edge sides of the strip. Right. Okay.
And I use a bias tape maker. I use the one made by Clover, and they come in many, many sizes, from 1/4 inch up to probably 2 inch. I don't think I've used anything that large, but I most often use the 3/8 inch. And lately, in the book, I used it even to make lettering on one of my quilts.
That's fascinating. That totally fascinates me. Yeah, I just think the lettering is very crisp, and so you must tell all.
Well, I'll tell you a couple little tips. And actually, okay. Because I knew we might be discussing this today, I put a tutorial up on my blog.
Perfect.
So we'll talk about it, and then the listeners can go to the blog and read the whole tutorial with photos and everything. But one of the important things is to cut your bias strips when you're cutting them mm-hmm. an eighth of an inch wider than, I'm not sure what the instructions say, but an eighth of an inch wider than double the finished mm-hmm. size. So if you're using a 3/8 inch bias tape maker, you're going to cut your strip 7/8 because mm-hmm. double is 6/8. And then add one extra eighth, no matter what size. So if you were using a 1-inch, you'd mm-hmm. cut your strips 2 1/8. That extra eighth inch is just enough extra little fabric. You know, it takes some fabric to fold,
yeah,
to come up over the fold. And that just gives you enough to make it so that you don't have edges flying out. And so that extra little scant eighth when you're cutting your strips. And then another tip is to, I always spray starch my strips before I feed them through the bias tape maker.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And that way, those edges stay crisply folded, and they won't come unfolded. And if you were to spray them after you got done pressing it through, mm-hmm. then those the moisture would just make the edges pop open. So you want to spray the strip first,
mm-hmm.
and then because it's sprayed and it's wet and it's limp and then you can't feed it into the bias tape maker. So what you do is just press that one little end for a couple inches
mm-hmm.
and then that makes that end kind of stiff and dry mm-hmm. and it will feed right through your bias tape maker really simply.
Okay.
And then pin it into your ironing surface, the end of it, so that you anchor the end of your bias strip down
mm-hmm.
and then just pull it along with, push it. I actually just push it with my iron.
Mm-hmm.
And as your iron pushes it along, it just folds those edges right over. It's the simplest thing. You have to just kind of guide your bias tape maker so that your fabric stays right in the center of it and doesn't shift to one side. But it is really, really simple. And once you're done, you have starch already in that piece of bias tape. And so now when you shape it with your iron, because it's cut on the bias, it will make curves and loops and whatever shape you need. When you shape it, put a little steam in your iron, and that will reactivate that starch that's in there, and it will hold in shape in place. So you shape it at your ironing surface, then you can pick it up, take it over to your quilt, and lay it on there, and it'll stay in shape.
Oh, see, I was just going to ask you, you know, because starch is going to make it a little firmer, how are you going to get it to curve? And so you're re-wetting it.
Yeah, with the steam.
Right, steam.
Use a steam iron. And actually, I've done it without the steam. It works, too, but the steam just makes it a little easier.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you've got it on your quilt, make sure you glue baste it in place so it doesn't shift as you're stitching. Mm-hmm. So I glue it down every half inch to an inch with my applique glue, mm-hmm. and that's my archival product that's safe to leave in your quilt. Mm-hmm. And then you can either stitch by machine or by hand. And all of that lettering I did on that one quilt in the book called Berry Patch, mm-hmm. I stitched all of that by machine.
Okay.
I don't normally do that. I usually stitch by hand, but it was a lot of lettering, and I had a book deadline. And, you know, it was so easy to do because everything, it didn't shift at all because it was all glued down.
Right.
And I just did a little top stitch right on the edge, both edges of the bias.
Now
you can't even see it.
I know. I was looking at the close-up, the picture on your blog. And you can get to the blog from your website, which is jillilystudio.com, Jill Lilly Studio. How do you tuck the ends under, Jill? Do you just shove under?
Like at the end of a letter or something like that.
Right.
Yeah. I just fold it under. And then if you have a little flag that sticks out, I usually leave, if I'm stitching by hand, I leave the flag sticking out and I tuck it under with my needle as I stitch to it. Mm-hmm. But if I'm stitching by machine, all those ends need to be tucked under now before I go to this machine. Mm-hmm. So I use an awl or something like that, something sharp, and just push those edges under and put a little dab of glue under there. Holds it in place.
Uh-huh.
And usually I just try to put the ends underneath another piece.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like on that gate that's showing on my blog, there's a gate that I did out of bias tape on a quilt called Secret Garden, and all of the ends of each piece are tucked underneath another piece.
Yeah.
So I didn't have to turn. So you don't turn them. Yeah. You just tuck them under.
Right, right. I just think that's brilliant. The lettering is, and it's very crisp, which is,
isn't it?
Yes. And that's in your book.
Yeah, it is. Uh-huh.
The Berry Patch. Oh, wow. This book is just, you know, everybody must add it to the...
Oh, thank you. It was such a fun project to do, and everyone has, I've gotten so many nice comments, but everybody's really enjoyed the book.
Yeah, Home Sweet Quilt. And now tell us just, you know, what's new for with you? What's coming up?
Well, let's see. This week I'm going to Road to California, which is a show in Ontario, California. I'm going to be a vendor there for Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And then I guess Sunday, too, half a Sunday. And I'll be demoing in my booth, and I'll have my books there and answer questions, and I'll have all my patterns and fabrics as well. Mm-hmm. And right now in stores, my line of fabric from Henry Glass that is out in stores right now is called Beyond the Gate, and that's the fabric line that I used in the Secret Garden quilt that has the gate on it.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see. I've got my thread is out with Aurifil. I've got new thread collections out. I absolutely love Aurifil thread. I use it for all my piecing and all of my top stitching, all of my hand applique. Well, you know, you're on the same page as me with the Aurifil.
Yes.
It's just awesome, isn't it?
It is. Your color collection is beautiful. It's very cheerful, and it has a range of clear colors in it.
Right, and I pick the colors that I usually use in my fabric designs, mm-hmm. so that if you buy my color collection from Aurifil, it will coordinate with any of my fabric designs. So it's going to be around for a long time, because I hopefully we'll be doing fabric for a long time too.
Well, Jill, this has been so fantastic. I wish you luck and fun and excitement at the show that you're going to.
Thank you so much. I wish you could come. If you come, come and see me.
Everybody else should see you.
Okay.
Visit Jill at Road to California. I am Pat Sloan for American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. We are going to be right back.
Do you have a recent project to share? Post a photo of your latest quilt project in our show and tell section at allpeoplequilt.com.
We're back at the Fall 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. It's a great show, folks. Don't forget to mind your P's and Q's with Applejack, an alphabet-themed collection by Tim and Beck. Next, we're taking a journey to a whimsical land filled with cute critters, flowers, and sweet confections with Cherry on Top by Keiki. Hallelujah! The muted reds, navies, and creams of Old Glory Gatherings by Primitive Gatherings brings a nostalgic feel to the runway. And now, something for the men in your life. Trails End combines the beauty of fall leaves and wildlife. Stay tuned for more runway reporting and visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Make your projects so much easier with great products from Sewline. Sewline offers a variety of innovative quality marking tools for quilters and sewers. The Sewline Trio is a 3-in-1 fabric marking tool that allows you to quickly change from black ceramic to white lead to a blank stylus with just one click. Both leads are water-soluble and designed to provide a crisp, clean line that's easy to erase. To purchase Sewline products, visit your local quilt shop.
Our editors share their tips, ideas, and techniques by visiting allpeoplequilt.com and clicking on Watch Videos.
Well, Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I am more than delighted to have Lisa Lamb of the UK on the show next. She's actually on Skype with me from England. She is mad about bags, the author of The Bag Making Bible, which I know a ton of you own this book, and then her other book, A Bag for All Seasons. They're both absolutely gorgeous, well-done books. So I'm excited to have Lisa come on and talk bag making with me. Hi, Lisa.
Hello, Pat. Hello, everybody.
This is so exciting. You know, I think as quilters, we all have to have a bag or two or 200. How did you start designing bags?
It was for, well, I think two main reasons got me onto the route of bag designing. Some years back, I took a certificate in shoemaking and shoe design, and that was actually taught next door to all of the guys making bags. It was about a third way into the course I realized I might have made the wrong decision, so every now and again I'd sneak into the bag designing crew and learn tips and play with their groovy machines. I did pretty well in the shoemaking course, don't get me wrong, I got some great techniques, but I always thought that the bag making looked a bit more fun.
Yeah.
And the second reason, after the shoemaking course, I couldn't get a job as the famous bag shoe designer that I thought I was going to be. So Jimmy Choo is completely safe in his role as a top shoe designer. Unfortunately, I was once given the most amazing, beautiful bag of free silk offcuts from a cutter maker friend. Way too nice to throw away, but way too small to make into the usual cushions or lampshades. So they stayed on in the fabric pile for a while, and then I thought I'd patch them together and make bags. And in my market store, they sold really, really quickly. So I stopped making all of the other bits and bobs I was making and concentrated on bags, and I haven't looked back since.
Ah, well, I think everybody's really happy that you found your voice in bag making.
Thanks.
Because, you know, not only are you designing them, you run a store called U-Handbag that has, you know, all kinds of parts and bits that everybody needs. One of the things I thought, you know, we chatted back and forth about, you know, what we could talk about. And I think for your bags, Lisa, everything is up a notch. Your pieces are not like sort of the everyday bags that a lot of us do. They sort of have those features and details that bring them up a couple of notches and look very professional, but very easy to do. Do you have a few tips on what people can do to sort of bring their bag making up a few notches?
Well, firstly, that's really nice thing for you to say. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And I also have to thank my mum for being a fab teacher. I kind of got the lust for teaching because she was so patient in all of the cooking and the sewing and the knitting, and it made us kids so happy. So yeah, I think that's why I enjoy it now. As for tips for making bags, I think if you're a newbie, it's really worth remembering that there's some really nice fabric out there. It's not like I need to tell any of you that. we are so spoiled. I have to admit to you, I never even knew quilt making fabric existed before I opened the U-Handbag. And then I saw quilt making fabric and I thought, oh, wow. Because before I'd just been using upholstery silk offcuts. I'm rambling. Fabric
right.
Always for me. Find
good fabric.
Find good fabric.
Right.
So sew the long ends together, pop some ribbon handles on, and you've got a bag. I think make it achievable to start off with when you're new. It's very, very addictive. Take it from there and then start looking to volume, structure. Maybe after you're happy with making a few magazine bags, when I say magazine, flat, you might want to maybe flatten the bottom, and then you've got some 3D structure going there. And then when you're happy with that, maybe add a magnetic snap. Magnetic snaps are the easiest thing to add, but they're shiny. They look kind of professional. It's very satisfying to click them open and shut them again. And then maybe moving on from a magnetic snap, you could look to making the bag maybe a bit firmer. I think the best thing to do is start easy. Let the fabric do the talking and then start changing the characteristics of the bag by, you know, adding structure, then maybe start thinking about interfacing. Look on blogs. There's lots of free advice. There's lots of great patterns out there.
So what do you advise, like, for interfacing to give that sort of crispness? Because, you know, being that, you know, a lot of us are quilters that are listening, you know, we tend to think, oh, we're going to quilt the layers. There's going to be batting in the middle and, you know, we're going to quilt it because that's how we think.
Sure.
But you're, you know, a lot of bags look more professional because they don't have the quilting. They're smooth, but
well,
still,
you know,
firm.
You know what? I think as you guys are expert quilters, you probably have the edge there because I have to confess, I've only made one quilt and I absolutely loved it. And I just said to myself, I'll make one quilt, get it out of my system, then I'll be done. But I swear, as soon as I get more time, I'll get back onto the quilt making thing again.
Okay.
The thing about quilting is it does add wonderful structure. You guys already understand how useful wadding is. You already understand how useful it is to stitch the wadding into the design.
Right, the batting, for those who don't know what wadding
absolutely.
Is. Right? Yeah,
absolutely. But what you might not have come across is putting things like fusible interfacing onto, let's say a bag has got an exterior, which is the bit that you see, and the inside fabric, which is the lining. You might have not put fusible interfacing onto the back of the exterior fabric. That adds a lot of crispness and firmness. The thing is, there's lots of different interfacings and interlinings, and I think the manufacturers are catching up with giving more advice. But I think when I first began, you just buy a product, there'd be no label, no instructions. It's very confusing.
Yeah, there's a lot more instructions now on everything. Do you use
absolutely.
A lot of silk in your work still? Do you recommend it for, like, interiors?
Oh, absolutely, because there's nothing like a 3D shape made out of silk. The way that light bounces off it is beautiful. And you can see that in quilts too. So I think you can pretty much use any fabric you want as long as you interface it and interline it properly. I don't think that's an exaggeration. What I will say is, if you're unsure, I think the very, very best interfacing to use for pretty much any fabric, from silks to a home deck weight, would be woven fusible. And that's usually, it looks like muslin.
Right.
It looks like cotton muslin, and one side will have heat-activated adhesive. And you'd be pretty safe on putting that on much anything.
Good advice. Tell me the difference between your two books. You know, so if somebody has one of the books, you know, so they can sort of understand what's the difference between them.
All right. I think the first book, The Bag Making Bible, is very techniques-led. That was intentional because at the time I wrote the book, there was no bag making books available which focused on the different parts of a bag. All of the bag books up then were based on, you know, certain projects that the designer had designed. But I wanted to do something different. I wanted to maybe help people who maybe had their own bag pattern, but they wanted to add a pocket, or they wanted to add a zip to it, or you know, how to use different types of handles. Or so the book's very useful in customizing your own patterns, or working from a pattern you've got already, or maybe encouraging you to design your own bag. The second book is more projects led, in that it's all projects which I've designed, with the intent of them being useful in some way. So, you know, bags like a wallet, or a bicycle pannier, or a children's toddler, you know, a toddler bag. I did that. I like usefulness because Like many women, we are busy doing 10 million things at one time, and craft time is sometimes a little bit limited. So perhaps, you know, perhaps it's nice to be able to enjoy the process of making something, but also the bonus of it being useful.
That's perfect. That's perfect. I think it's a great description between the two books, because you yourself are a very busy mom. You have a toddler.
Yes.
It's Mabel, she's right?
Yes, it's Mabel. She's a gorgeous handful. I have so much respect for all mums now. I mean, not that I didn't before, but now, now I truly understand what it is to be busy.
So did you make your own diaper bag, Lisa? Did you do that?
Yes, I did.
Good.
I did. The diaper bag that I use is in the Bag for All Reasons. It's got 10 pockets, no less, and a matching changing mat. And all of the pockets do get used, believe me.
Right. Well, Lisa, this has been wonderful to have you on the show. I really appreciate it because it's a bit late over there in England right now.
You're worth it. It was worth staying up. And besides, husband's making me a lovely dinner. So.
Oh, there you go. Well, everybody can visit Lisa Lamb at u-handbag.com and check out her site and her blog. So thanks, Lisa.
Thanks a lot, Pat. Thanks really much for having me.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. We are going to be right back.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
The Fall 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show is about to start. First up, the exotic fabrics of Cusco by Kate Spain and Chant, with rich fuchsia, indigo, and orchid. Do you hear that? It's the ocean breezes coming from the Seascapes collection by Dead Strain. It's no mystery. You'll love the Get a Clue with Nancy Drew line. Hearts and flowers and houndstooth, oh my. Kissing Booth by Basic Gray brings romance to the runway. Stay tuned for more runway reporting. Visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
We're listening to you. Comment on today's show and tell us your ideas for future shows. Visit the contact page on our website, allpeoplequilt.com. Now, back to the show. Here's Pat.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Our editors, Jennifer Keltner and Jody Sanders of American Patchwork and Quilting, did a little chat about trends, what they saw going on in the quilt industry. So let's listen in.
As editors, we're always on the lookout for trends in color and fabric, even for trends in design or decorating, things that we can share with our readers so that in the pages of our magazines and our books and calendars and even online at allpeoplequilt.com. But because we work so far out, on our print issues in particular, we really have to be thinking about 6 months ahead of time what we see the trends are going to be so that we can present those in the pages of the magazine. So, Jody, today I thought it would be fun if we sort of went over for some of our listeners the trends that we've been gathering most recently at Quilt Market and at shows that we've been going to and what we're seeing coming up for 2013.
I think one of the biggest trends is in color, and particularly we're kind of calling this blew me away, shades of blue. And it's everything from navy blue to like a high seas blue, a bright skies blue. We're seeing it everywhere. And we know that that is America's favorite color. So we're not surprised that we're seeing it, but we're really seeing it strong this season. And one of the examples that we have in our magazines is the cover quilt from American Patchwork and Quilting, February 2013. And that's the Winding Ways quilt that was designed and made by Laura Banky, who's our quilt tester, and it's a fabulous quilt made of all shades of blue and creams and whites, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful example of all the great blue fabrics out there right now.
Color trends absolutely are something that we keep a watch on, because we know that those color trends that we see introduced at markets and things are going to translate into what fabric companies are offering. So one of the color trends we watch is Pantone Color of the Year. And for 2013, the Pantone Color of the Year is Emerald Green. And in 2012, it was Tangerine Tango, and that color started cropping up everywhere in fabrics and in pattern fronts that we were seeing. So I anticipate that Emerald Green will also follow that same trend and become a big hit. And we'll see more greens being introduced by fabric companies as it's taken over the color crown for the year.
Well, and kind of looking at the opposite side, we've looked at kind of blue and green as being really bright colors. I think gray is the kind of the new neutral, or it's coming on stronger. We saw a lot with the Modern Quilt Guild that they were using solids or tone-on-tone colors with white. And I think in the last year or two, we've seen gray kind of replace white as that neutral. More recently at market, we saw it was a more taupey gray, more mushroomy, a little more brown undertone in it than the steel gray maybe that we had seen previously. But I really think that gray is here to stay as a neutral.
Absolutely. Once we get past color trends, we also look at shapes of things to come. And the hexagon is really, it was the shape of 2012, and we see it staying strong in 2013 as well. And the interesting thing about hexagons is we used to think of them mostly as English paper piecing and just a shape that you had to piece together by hand, but now we're seeing them not done just by hand, but also sewn together by machine, applique onto things, printed, the shape printed onto fabric, and also just showing up in all sorts of different, maybe unexpected ways. So I saw a lot more hexagons combined together to look like honeycombs, and also the bee motif, little buzzing bees on fabrics combined with hexagon shapes. So I think that's coming down the pike as well.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because we kind of thought the hexagon was a trend that was maybe going to be a 1 or 2 year thing, but it's continuing to remain strong, whether it's in bags or quilts or pillows. We're seeing it, like you said, in all shapes and sizes and in different applications of it.
Right, and even I'm seeing more pre-cuts coming out in hexagon shapes. There are a couple of companies that are offering those as pre-cuts, which makes it super easy. And also with die cuts, they're super easy to cut out. There are pre-cut paper pieces if you like to do the English paper piecing. So lots of helps for people who like the hexagon shape but maybe don't want to cut them all out by hand.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Another motif or kind of design that we're seeing that remains strong along with the hexagon is dots. I think it was 2010, maybe 2011, that we kind of had declared that as the year of the dot in our office. Well, 2013 and beyond, we're seeing that it's still really a strong design motif. And the thing is, we're seeing it in different sizes. We're seeing it as a reverse. We're seeing it as big dots, little micro mini dots. They're everywhere. They're on fabric. They're on patterns. We're seeing the round or the orb design really popular among the quilting and sewing enthusiasts, I think.
And those of you who know me know I am passionate about polka dots. I love, love, love them. But I love that they're even making it mainstream into home decor and fashion, and they're everywhere. So I'm happy to see that continue on. One of the other trends we're seeing for 2013 is a resurgence in handwork. And I love this one as well because I do enjoy sitting down at night and just spending time with my family and doing a little bit of embroidery or stitching on wool. And handwork is really making a comeback. And it's everything from embroidery, simple backstitch designs to cross stitch is making a comeback. So if you've saved those patterns and that floss, now's the time to pull them out. It's kind of like the knitting rage was a few years ago. It just takes so little to begin doing some simple stitchery work, just a needle and thread. And whether it's basic outline stitching or a simple drawing that you can just do a little stem stitch around, it adds a nice touch of handwork even to a quilt block, or whether you're hand embroidering a label for something, you can add a touch of it to a handbag. We recently did some little covered buttons that featured embroidery work on them, and then just using that piece of embroidery to cover the button. So handwork is making a comeback. So for those of you who like to keep busy, who have a lot of time spent in the car waiting on people or waiting at appointments, handwork is a great way to get a little creativity into whatever time you have and to come out with a great design.
It's been fun for me. I did cross stitch 25 years ago, and I've been able to go back to that little plastic box that had all those embroidery flosses that I had wrapped around the cardboard little containers there with the numbers on them. It's been fun to be able to go back and use some of those embroidery flosses again on some of the handwork that I've been doing.
And the nice thing about that is that thread takes up less room than fabric. It doesn't necessarily always take up less money, but it is a great thing. If you're addicted to collecting things, collecting fun threads is fun too.
That's right. Another trend that we're seeing is something that we kind of like to call creature feature in the office. It's woodland animals, and we're finding them in owls remain strong. Again, I think it's another thing that we thought was maybe going to be, you know, a couple-year trend, but we're continuing to see it in home decor and fabrics, printed on fabrics, little pincushions that are made of owls. Owls are continuing to remain a strong trend. Deer, hedgehogs, we've seen lots of cute little hedgehogs, both printed on fabric and as little pincushions, foxes, birds, and even raccoons. Again, we've seen them in all different shapes and sizes, and some of them are more whimsical, probably more whimsical versus the true-to-life in most of these, but they're really fun to see which animals are going to crop up on the horizon next.
Absolutely. And I think that one thing that's interesting about the woodland creature trend to me is if you are into paper crafting at all, woodland creatures were probably 5 years ago really coming on strong in the scrapbooking and paper crafting market. And a lot of times there are motifs there and designs there that eventually make their way to fabric. So some of those cute little novelty prints that we see in fabric stores now actually had their beginnings in paper crafting. So if you're looking for trends of what the hottest little animals are going to be, check out your paper crafting store and see what you find there, because chances are it's also going to be coming to quilting. The other animal, not a woodland creature necessarily, or it might be a scary forest if you were in it and this popped out, but I think the biggest, pun intended, I guess, single animal on the scene that was everywhere at market was the elephant. And we saw elephants appliqued onto baby quilts. We saw elephants printed onto fabric. We saw patterns that had elephant motifs on it. And I've been noticing in a lot of home decor catalogs different elephant statues and elephant pillows and elephants on curtains and shower curtains, and the elephant is everywhere. So have trunk, will travel. Take the elephant along in 2013.
That's right. I think as editors, one of the trends that we're loving right now is typography. And we're seeing lots of letters and words on fabric as appliques on pillows, incorporated into quilt blocks and artwork, decor. Make it personal. Make it wordy. Make it fun. And we just love the whole typography that's available right now, both in fabrics and patterns.
And I would add to that that the one thing I've seen a trend in is not just letters, but with that typography, also numbers. Numbers are really an important trend, I think, coming along there, too. And people either have a favorite number or they have a significant number. It's the date. It's a birth date. It's an anniversary date, or it's a special year that they remember. And I think that those numbers can also add something that is very personal to your family and your displays. Another trend we see, it used to be that panels were sort of a dirty word in the quilting world because people thought of them as cheater cloth or they weren't really quilting. But, man, we've seen some terrific panels coming out from the fabric manufacturers and beautiful panels that really don't require a lot of additional piecing, but that you can add a board or two or some blocks around the outside and make something that is really nice that you can be proud to display in your home. So I think the bad rap that panels have gotten is over, and in 2013, we're really going to see those coming on strong and making a big impact.
I think one of the things that has been exciting for me to see is kind of the re-emergence to a felt. I think for especially some novice crafters or people that are just getting into making things, felt is a really easy starting point. There's a lot of colors. It's accessible. You can get it at many different places, and it's a little more affordable than wool can be. So if you're just beginning and not sure if you want to do that kind of thing, I think felt is really a fun place to start.
And I'll wrap it up with one last trend we've seen, and I kind of attribute this one to the Pinterest. So many people love to go on Pinterest and look for things that are fun and exciting to do, and you see a lot of dip dye projects that are done with fabric dye or paint, where people are dipping in, and you see that transition or gradation of color or shades going from one to the next. And we're seeing that trend come into the fabric market as well. And a lot of fabric companies are coming up with ombre, either prints on fabric or ombre ribbons, where that color shift or changes. And sometimes it changes colors completely, and other times it's just from one hue to another in the same color family. But lots more ombre coming our way, I think, in 2013. Thanks so much, Jody, for getting together today and talking about these trends. Watch for trends in your catalogs that you get in the mail and in things that you see online, and see how you can translate those to your quilts and your projects that you're making. We think it's a great way to keep your quilting fresh and exciting for the new year and to just enjoy what it is that you're making.
I always love listening to the editors. They go through the trade show and really do some amazing analysis. They are the most fantastic note takers I have ever seen. You know, I've been with them afterwards looking at what they saw and what their interpretations are. And so, you know, they're really spot on when they come on the show and do this kind of a talk about trends. Now, you may have heard something that they just talked about that you thought, I'd really like to do that. Let's say like hexagons. You know, maybe you haven't tried a hexagon yet, or it's been a long time. You can go to allpeoplequilt.com, and you can just put hexagon up in the search box. And out there, we have a lot of, you know, patterns and tutorials. So not only can you get, you know, instruction on exactly how to do this for, let's say, the hexagon, but then you can find several different quilt options to use those hexagons in. One of the big ones that I like is called Big on Tradition. It's really a neat quilt because it's very large hexagons and it's all sort of pieced. It's done a little differently, but it gives you that, you know, same feel of the paper piecing. So remember, you can go out to allpeoplequilt.com, stick the item you're looking for up in the search box and see what you find. We're going to take a little break here. And when we come back, I have Vicki Epen on of Sugar Spun Quilts.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. Welcome back to the Fall 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. These collections are hot, hot, hot. Fig Tree is back with a new collection called Tapestry, which weaves together Greek and Moroccan influences for a beautiful result. We're mad for the plaids in the WeWoven's Brights collection. Next, pull up an Adirondack chair and enjoy the Ocean View by Paul Brent. And finally, Three Sisters delivers a delicious helping of double chocolat with scrumptious colors of dark chocolate, cherry, caramel, and vanilla bean. Stay tuned for more runway reporting. Visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Babylock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos. Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Vicki Epen is here. She is a regular contributor to American Patchwork and Quilting's family of magazines. You'll find lots of her projects in our magazines. Plus, she is also one of the Moda Bake Shop authors and has her own new book coming out in just a few short weeks called Large Block Quilts. Vicki's website is SpunSugarQuilt.com, and she's here to chat about all things quilting. Hi, Vicki.
Hi, Pat. How are you?
I am good. I am good. So I am really excited about your book. That is like, must be so thrilling to just be waiting on the edge of it being here.
It is very thrilling. It seems like it's taken a long time, but it's well worth the wait.
Right. Yeah, I know. They always do. They seem like they've been like having three children instead of just one, you know?
Yes.
The time frame. So what the book's name is called Large Block Quilts. Tell me why you decided to do this book.
Well, I wanted to make, you know, simple, quick quilts that you could make in a weekend or a couple of weekends or, you know, short time like a retreat, and things that are designed for any level of quilter. And to help make that more possible, you know, all the blocks are relatively large. The smallest block is like 12 and a half inches, and the largest block is 24 inches.
Ooh, wow. Fun.
So that, you know, the larger blocks, you know, bigger pieces, it mm-hmm. goes together a little bit faster, that sort of thing.
Right. You can build a larger size quilt if your blocks are bigger. You know, it's sort of like a mental game a little bit, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of math.
So when you were doing this book, was one of your focus to use also, I'm just curious, since the blocks are a little bit bigger, did you use larger scale fabric?
I kind of used a variety of fabrics. Mm-hmm. I intentionally kind of forced myself to use different styles, batiks. There are some novelty kind of kid prints, large mm-hmm. florals, Christmas, that sort of thing, and different you know, fabrics other than what I tend to gravitate towards. So yeah, novelties are definitely something that you could use in the larger blocks, but
wasn't, you know, the focus of the book.
Yeah, I didn't want it to be just primitive or just batiks or bright. Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of tried to touch on a lot of different areas to make it fall within more of the simple and quick, you know, instead of feeling like you had to go out and maybe buy a whole new bundle of fabric, although that would be wonderful. Some of us want to use our stash. So,
mm-hmm. Right.
And so these are quilts you could really, you know, take a bundle of your fabric and use your stash.
So,
as well as, you know, so.
Yeah, I mean, we all have stash, so, you know, we don't, and it doesn't have to be like a total collection of things, because you show, you know, some of the quilts have fabrics that probably came together, but some are just like pulled off the shelf.
Yes, exactly.
Yep. So which do you find easier, using something that's sort of bundled up already for you, or picking your own?
you know, a little bit of both of that. It goes into the quilts in the book, but just even mm-hmm. with my own, you know, let's say it wasn't a quilt from the book, mm-hmm. I tend to start with a bundle, but I mm-hmm. end up breaking out the ones that I like maybe the most, you know, mm-hmm. if I start with a fat quarter bundle, because sometimes you don't like every single print. You know, there might be 40. And
right.
Then I kind of take one print that I think is not my favorite, and I make sure I include that in the quilt, because it's usually one that I'll think later, I'll think, wow, I'm really glad I put that in there, because it's sort of your little sparkle, you know.
Right,
That's what I find.
I like that idea, because, you know, some of the designs in a collection, you're right, there's you know, often you'll just go, oh, well, I'm not really that keen on that color or the layout they put on that particular one. You know, you can't love every single piece, so... But they go well when you get a collection. Yeah. The color wise,
sometimes
they all
you think,
go well.
Why did they put that color in there? And then when I actually put it in the quilt, I think, oh, I see why. Or that really worked, and I wasn't sure it was going to. So just to try to think outside of what's comfortable usually can make that quilt just a little bit better than maybe it was going to be without that fabric. So.
I think that's a really excellent way of thinking about it. Just, you know, just to try it. And you do some auditioning. You do some interesting ways of auditioning. Can you share that?
Well, a lot of times what I will do is I'll take, you know, I've been quilting for a long time, so I have a lot of stash, you know, like all of us do. And so I'll test a block in a fabric bundle, maybe that wasn't intentional, you know, instead of using the fabric I thought I was going to use, I'll just make it out of something just sitting there. I'll think, oh, I'll just try this. And a lot of times I end up making the whole quilt out of that. And one particular quilt in the book, it's called Quaint. That particular quilt was designed completely differently, completely different fabrics. It was supposed to be red, white, and blue, and I ended up with more like the gray and the citron and, you know, oranges and just completely different fabric line, because I had started, I did a test block and I liked the test block so much that it became the quilt. So
I think that's like serendipity or something, you know, it's like, wow,
it was supposed to be, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things I notice with your quilts, Vicki, you know, and I'm sure this isn't with everything, but I do notice that you have an excellent use of either a solid or a tone-on-tone with a lot of your blocks. So your quilts will be, you have the really beautiful, colorful fabrics, and then you might pair it with a cream or a cream tone-on-tone or like a chocolate or something like that. Do you always do that, or is it just a way you like the quilts to look?
I tend to do that. Yeah, I think when I think about just about every quilt that I make, again, there comes that whole side of, you know, trying to force yourself to think outside of what is comfortable. And because I started when I started quilting, I used to use a lot of the 1930s prints, which I've, you know, collected for a long time, and they pair very well with like a solid, like a white, or something like that. So I gravitate towards white. So I kind of, again, think to myself, what would make this quilt more interesting? What if I used this instead? And that's where the grays come in, or the tiny sort of tone on tone, or the light, you know, white backgrounds with tiny little pink dots and things like that. So really trying to do that as a quilter, I think anyone can do that, you know, take a chance.
Give it a try.
That's what I do every time I make a quilt. Yeah. If you don't like it, you know, you can always do it a different way. I mean, you can take it apart or you could do it again. There, you know, test blocks, that comes coming back to that and just trying it out. And, you know, and if it doesn't work, it can be a pillow or something.
Right. Yeah, the infamous
with
pillow, right?
With the larger blocks, you know, you can make a lot of couch pillows that way.
Yep, we could just fill the entire couch with, not that fabric combination. Let's do another one. They're going to be writing you, Vicki. They're going to be saying, wait.
Yeah.
So you also
How do I make
some,
the pillow? No.
Yeah, to become the pillow queen. You have a few of your projects that you've contributed have also been put on the allpeoplequilt.com website. I thought maybe you could tell us a little bit about Ring Toss, which might not be in your colorway on the website. Sometimes the website has one of the alternate colorways to what was in the magazine.
Yes. And I can't tell you right off the top of my head which colorway it is on the blog, but
I think it's
that started.
It's got like greens and pinks and yellows and grays on there.
Yeah, that I started with a Fat Eighth a bundle of fabric, and I was just trying to see how big of a quilt I could get out of a fat eighth bundle of fabric, trying to use the lights and the darks and use them creatively together to, that's how that quilt came about. But when you write some of the directions for quilts, you can't always say just grab a fat eighth bundle. As you know, you have to get a little more specific than that. So I don't know if it's written specifically on their site for fat eighths, but that was where the original idea came from. How well can I use something like that, like a fat eighth instead of fat quarters?
Right. Oh, that, you know, that's fascinating. I'm so glad you said that because, you know, they don't write it like that. They give you a little bit more specifics on the site as to exactly how much you need to make it look very much like the picture. But yeah, there's lots of little collections of fat eighth bundles now. So it's great to have a project that you know is going to work for it.
Exactly. And that one will. So
now there's you had a project in Moda's Fresh Treats book. What was your project in there?
It was called the Wonky Nine Patch, and that one I have done three versions of that quilt, and the one that's in the book is made using me and my sister fabrics because, you know, Fresh Fabric Treats is Moda Bake Shop, and so we use Moda fabrics, and I have done it in French General, and I've done it in Sweetwater fabrics. So it's one of those patterns where in the book, you know, you might want to gravitate towards those bright, cheery kid fabrics, but you could always make it a picnic quilt, changing it to something like French General and that sort of thing. Mm. So it's a versatile quilt, and it's fun because you don't really have to measure. You know, you just sort of cut in wonky ways, and it brings it all together. Makes it look a little modern, but it still has some structure to it.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah, and I love seeing a quilt made in other fabrics than what the original. That just is so inspirational.
I agree. Yeah. I agree.
Now, you actually, we were talking, and I was asking, well, you know, do you have any hobbies, Vicki? And you have a hobby that I haven't heard anybody tell me about recently, that you collect Blythe dolls, and you make their clothes, and do you make quilts for them, too?
I haven't made any quilts for them, no, but I've thought about it. Oh. There are actually some sites on Etsy where they have special beds that are made. That fit the dolls, and so I was tempted. I thought, you know, I really could make something small, and, you know, like I thought about the quarter-inch paper piece, like hexagons, you know, really tiny little hexagons
cute.
And things, but I haven't started that yet. I tend to do more knitting for them because, some of us, we love quilting, but we have other interests, you know, embroidery and cross-stitch and knitting, and so I knit little things, and my daughters also collect. My 5-year-old, my 11-year-old, they love the dolls, so we sort of can do it together. You know, we're always changing their outfits, and so they like to do it with me. It's sort of a something we can bond with, but...
I think that's fabulous. I just think that's fabulous. Vicki, this has been so much fun. Thank you for being on the show.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Everybody go visit Vicki at Spun Sugar Quilts and look for her new book, Large Block Quilts, coming out soon. This is Pat Sloan from American Patchwork and Quilting Radio.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks.